Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. We recorded the episode you're about to hear this weekend after the basking in the glow of the rare win over Toronto, but before the loss to Indiana. And in the interim, the Bulls obviously have lost two in a row, including a tough loss to Indiana, and tonight's 139-117 blowout loss to Cleveland. They're an astonishing 2-9 in their last 11 games, and yet somehow they've managed to increase their lead on the 10th seed. Just incredible stuff. So in this episode you're about to hear, Doug and I break a lot down, including the strong play of Zach Collins since he came to the team. We do a deep dive into the plus-minus stat, which I'm sure you'll find entertaining. And we talk about what Josh Giddey's next contract might look like for the beloved Bull. So buckle up, enjoy the show, and as always, go Bulls. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look over to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother? What's going on?
Yeah, just living the dream. You know, got that big win against the Raptors. Real excited about that. And yeah, go Bulls.
Can't contain myself.
Can't contain yourself.
Go Bulls. Yeah. Incredible. What a win that was, huh? I mean, that was part of the reason I brought it up. You know, at the trade deadline, about my frustration with this Ball move is Lonzo Ball impacts winning. And he had no doubt he helped seal that win yesterday. He had a massive shot in overtime off of Nick Collins rebound that he hit the three. I think he had two threes in the overtime. I mean, it's not a tourist. You keep guys like this on the roster and you just make moves to get Zach off the roster. All you've really done is just made us a worse 10 seed in the Eastern Conference. What say you?
I mean, we talked about that before. I don't think anyone wanted Vooch. Vooch is gone anyway. You know, like when you think about it, it's like, do you think Kevin Huerter and Zach Collins were guys who were going to add a lot of wins? I mean, I think the real problem is just like they have too many pedestrian-ish, like real players, you know, like Zach Collins or even Kevin Huerter, even though they kind of suck. Like they suck when you're trying to build a good team. But maybe they're like a little bit too good, and Kobe and Io and Giddey and like all these guys, and I don't think it's just Lonzo, but like all these guys collectively are too good to tank against teams like the Wizards and the Raptors and the Nets. And so, you know, that's really, I think, what the problem is. And I think that was about trading Kobe and Io to me mostly, you know, and Lonzo. Yeah, we could have traded Lonzo, but you know, I told you 3 months ago, like we just weren't going to be worse than probably ninth. You know, I looked for a hot second. Maybe we could hang an eighth. Maybe we still can, but it's just not going to be better than that. Like we're not bad enough. We have too many pieces and there's too many other teams that are like going with zero pieces effectively.
Well, I think we are still pretty bad.
Yeah, we're pretty bad. I mean, like 30 games is pretty bad, but it's not like it's not getting the top five bad. Like, we're going to win 32 games this year. That's not top five bad. It's never top five bad. Like, no year is that bad enough to be top five.
Well, especially in the Eastern Conference. There's this, I think, general attitude that the Bulls have been playing pretty well. We're 3-8 since the Zach LaVine trade. We're 27% winning percentage during that period. We beat a horrible Toronto team. We were 21-28 before with a 42% winning percentage when Zach was on the team. What we've done is we've gotten rid of our best player. But you should have gone all in. You should have moved Kobe White. You should have moved Lonzo Ball. And you should have given away Vooch for, you know, a box of donuts. Or even just moving Ball and White, would have we would be 2-9. We wouldn't have won last night if White wasn't on the team. And we went halfway in. We're kind of trying to play this middle. We bring in some decent players that have helped us. And it's insanity to me. It's just frustrating.
Well, Fred, we're not trying to lose. Like I don't know why you think like we would be trying to lose. Like I said this when Arturis Karnišovas had the press conference. He said, like, yeah, I hope we win. I hope the guys we have are good enough to get us to the playoffs. That's what he said he hopes for. That's what he wants. He wants to get into the play-in. Like, that is what they want. They do not want to tank. They do not want to be really bad. That is not the direction they're going. So it's like not a surprise that they didn't do those things. I mean, right? Like that's not what they want to do. I mean, we both think they should do that, but that's not what they want
to
do.
I think they are going to try to be bad next year, though. Do you feel that way? I think they're going to try. From what Arturas has kind of hinted at, next year will also be a down year. Hopefully get a high draft pick in a pretty good draft and then go for it when all those contracts are off the books.
Why is next year going to be any more down than this year? Like it's not. They're going to be like 34 wins again. They are not set up to be really good to get a really good draft pick, and they are not trying to, and they're not going to.
Yeah, they're 3-8 after Zach is gone. I think Vooch is going to be far worse.
Well, Vooch isn't helping them. Vooch,
it could get bad.
The last 2 months, he's been terrible. So like that doesn't matter. And you know, Giddy's been playing better. The team's found a little bit of whatever. Like Zach Collins is actually better than Vooch. Like Kevin Huerter's kind of finding his stroke. Like. They're going to get whoever they get in the offseason. Like they're not positioning themselves to be bottom five, bottom six bad. They're doing that on purpose. And so, you know, whatever plans we would make, the Chicago Bulls are not going to follow them.
They're going to pick 11th or 12th this year, Doug. They'll pick 11th or 12th next year. And then they'll try to say, we're going all in on whatever that will be. I kind of agree with you. It's just so frustrating. I wish they would have just gone all in on this rebuild for this year and next. I think we'd be in a lot better spot. I think there's a lot of frustration with Billy Donovan again. And you see it like in almost every podcast I listen to complains about Billy Donovan and how he's handled Mata specifically this year so far. But to me, like the last 9 games since Mata has started, and the last few weeks have completely justified his approach on Modest throughout the season. Modest is clearly struggling against starters. He was protected all year. If the direct from the front office is to play to win, then Billy made the right decision all year in how he's been playing Modest. And I think after the All-Star break, he got a directive, play him 25 minutes a game. He's playing him 25 minutes a game. He gave him enough minutes to build confidence. But if he was playing him more, he would be actively hurting the chances for this team to win. And then limiting his role, if that's the goal, was the right move. Because since he's been in the starting lineup, he just hasn't been playing well against higher competition. That's a fact. That's the reality, especially on the defensive end. I will say it's not up to Billy to prioritize development. So that's a directive that's got to come from the front office. And to me, it's clear based on how he's playing these guys, the message is to win. Maybe there is something to that. Maybe there will be a benefit for Josh and Modest to get into the play-in and actually get that taste. But I don't think it's worth it.
I mean, I don't know that Modest is playing great against starters, but in the month of February, he's averaged 26.8 minutes. He's averaging 12.8 points a game, shooting 50% from the field, 31.5% from three, 60% true shooting.
No, for January?
For February.
No, for February, I got his stats in front of me. He's shooting 42%, 23% from three. I just looked at it before.
I got the stats in front of me, too.
I take that back. The last night, since he's been a starter.
Yeah, I'm just looking at February. Yeah, I'm looking at February, so maybe the two games.
So you got that 10-for-10 game. Yeah. Right before he became a starter, he was 10-for-10 and 5-for-9 in the two games. Yeah. And technically, those weren't.
Yeah, I'm looking at the February. Yeah, I'm looking at the February splits because it was just easier. So that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. My point was, though, he was put in that role coming off the bench against inferior competition as a starter, 26 minutes, 11 points per game. 43% from the field, 23% from three. He's a minus 7.9 on plus minus, which I'm sure you're going to love.
Dude.
3 rebounds a game, I think.
Can I spend 20 minutes talking about how stupid you are with all your plus minus tweets?
I don't want to talk about plus minus.
Then don't like tweet about it. Like it's like you compare a guy in a game where we're down by 50 and you compare his raw plus minus to a guy in a game where we're up by 50. Like those two guys minus differences.
That's exactly what you did. Accurate.
You compared two games of Zach Collins. One of them we were up by 50 until we pulled the starters in, and like one and he was like a plus 40 in that game, and then the other game he was like a plus 6 in a game that was basically a draw. To games with Vooch that were like whatever. Like do you think Zach Collins is like a plus 28 player?
That's not the point I was making.
Like, because that would be like three times as good as like Nikola Jokic.
That's not the point.
So no, then there is no point then. If you're saying these stats don't mean that. You're saying these stats do not mean he is that good and makes that difference. Then what do you think they mean? They mean nothing. If they do not mean what the numbers say, then they don't mean anything. Like, and they're pointless to quote. in like single game situations, which they are.
I highlighted 8-game stretch, 9-game stretch of Vucevic. Continual negative plus minuses, largely in part to his crappy play over the last multiple weeks. Everybody who goes steps on that court has a role in building that plus minus number. You don't believe in it. Completely fine. You don't think there's any defensive stats.
No.
I'm telling you, as someone who's looked at this over the course of many years, when I coached and when I'm involved in basketball, plus minus over the course of many games can indicate to someone whether or not that person has an impact on winning. He is a losing player. He's never won in the NBA. And the reason is because he's not good defensively, and he's an interior player. And occasionally he'll serve as a stretch five once every 5 years. But overall, that game that he brings to the court,
you know, I agree
is not
with that.
Winning basketball.
You know, I agree with you.
He's not a winner.
And here's what I'm going to say to stop using plus minus. One, it's not regressed plus minus. It doesn't account for the quality of your teammates. It doesn't account for the quality of your team. It doesn't account for like what the score is happening. It doesn't account for the quality of your opponents. It doesn't account for like stupid stuff like you foul the guy, got pulled out, and then you come in and you get minus two because someone else shot two free throws when you weren't even on the court when the foul happened. Like, it doesn't account for all of these really common things. There are versions of plus minus which fix all of that. And so if you want to have to use this statistic, even that version, it takes about like a whole season for it to mean something. But if you want to, use that version of it, which you can use EPM, which is like based on plus minus data, and it gets rid of all of the noise to some degree. And it's like a way better version of the same thing you're using. But when you use the raw one, it doesn't mean anything. And it certainly doesn't mean anything over a 3-game stretch. Now, I agree, Nikola Vucevic is a train wreck. I've been on the Nikola Vucevic is a train wreck, like leading that bus way longer than you have. So like you're preaching to the choir there. But like all this stuff about Zach Collins and like you're acting like Zach Collins is great. Zach Collins also sucks. Like this is like that number for him is just complete noise. Like Zach Collins blows. There's a reason he hasn't like barely played this year prior to this. Like he also stinks. Like probably is better than Vooch because Vooch is just like so bad. But like he stinks. And so like just stop quoting these numbers. Go find the better version of these numbers.
Yesterday, the Bulls won by 10 points. When Zach Collins was on the court, they were plus 28. You can argue all day that he stinks. He's not a good player. The guy missed almost two full seasons due to injury. That's just been his biggest issue as an NBA pro. For Collins, last night, I highlighted four plays on Twitter where he just simply set screens and diverted defenders to create open looks for teammates. He did that consistently last night. He had a fantastic game. He didn't get any stats or any Kobe White getting two layups that he was an integral part of that happening. He generated 5 points through his defense. These plays had an impact on that game. I'm just saying, like, you can say the stat doesn't matter, but when you're plus 28 and the next guy's plus 16, you had an impact on that game.
It does. No, it doesn't. It's not like factually, that's not even true. He might have had an impact on that game. All the things you said are absolutely true, right? Everything you pointed out is true. That doesn't mean his plus minus shows that impact. That's why I explained all the reasons why this stat is bad. There are statistically, factually true things. Like, if you just use this number, it is not an accurate predictor of what will happen in the future. It is complete noise. There's lots of studies that show that. So I agree with your point that, like, sometimes things don't show up in the box score. Sometimes all these things a guy does that don't show up in a box score do show up in, like, a plus minus because, you know,
yeah,
like,
Alex Caruso.
Yeah, he does well. But then another thing that can happen is that team just goes in a hot streak. He has nothing to do with it. And his plus minus is killed. Like anything can happen. He can be on the court. Yes, you quoted 3 games. That's a small period of time. Over a month, those things are still true, Fred. Everything I said about plus minus is based on scientific actual research into the stat, which is why I said you can use a version of this if you're just in love with it. You can use a version of it that fixes all the flaws. So use EPM, which is just plus minus based with all of this other stuff regressed out that accounts for quality of opponents, which accounts for quality of teammates, which accounts for game scores, which accounts for all the other little things. And you can use that instead of this thing that's really terrible. You could just switch to the thing that's just the better version of this. It's like you're just like have a handful of dollar bills, and I'm telling you, you could have a handful of $100 bills, and you're like, nah, I want the singles. They're all paper. It's the same thing. They're all money. They mean the same thing. It's just like the same thing. Look, I have all these bills. They're rupees. What do you mean that's not as good as having like $100 bills? They're paper. Mine also has 100 on it. I have 500 rupee bills. I don't understand what you're saying. That's what your argument is here.
I'm arguing so just, like, that
use
value
the better version of the thing.
Okay, maybe one day I'll go.
The value, which is like scientifically, you're saying data that it's science not, proven to not be true.
You're saying that it's not true. It's not proven to not.
It
Doug,
is true.
Go look at
it
the plus minus.
It is true. Doug. I just named, which of the things that I say is wrong? Which of the things I said?
You're saying that
it doesn't account for quality of opponents. It doesn't account for quality of teammates. It doesn't account for score, quality of team, like all these other little things that can adjust it. Doesn't account for luck-based shooting. And you're just saying, like, which part of that's not true, Fred? All of it is true.
No, over the course of a year.
Over the course of the year, all those things are still true, Fred. All those things are still true over the course of a year.
I got news for you. When you look at the plus-minus at the end of the year, usually the best guys in plus-minus are your best.
Are you saying plus-minus is better than EPM?
No,
the
I'm
version
not saying
that gets
that.
Rid of all the things
I'm not
I
saying
said.
That. You're saying there's no value in this statistic. I'm telling you, you're nuts. And I'm telling you,
okay,
number one, you're nuts.
There's value,
number two,
there's values in
people
rupees
use
too,
it. You people
there's
use
values
it.
In rupees. You can have 100. No, no professional basketball person uses this.
That's not true.
No, it is absolutely true. Absolutely true. Every organization uses the versions of the things I said and even better versions of them.
Agreed.
That they have
I'm not denying that there's
no one
better
uses
versions
this.
Of the stats.
No one uses this. And I told you a better version. You can go look it up. It's totally free.
Doug.
Stop using the shit version. That's all I'm saying.
At the end of the night.
At the end of the night, stop using the shit version. Stop saying stuff that just makes you look stupid because it's just factually wrong.
You just because like, you don't like the
crap.
Stat. You act like there's nothing
no,
to be blamed
it's because it's not accurate.
It is an accurate number. It shows what you happened to your team when
it
you were out
show,
on the court.
It does not show what you're trying to make it show. Okay, so Zach Collins is like a plus 30 player.
No,
like
I'm
just
not
over three
that.
Games. He's going to add 15
Doug,
wins.
I just
or 15
I
points.
Highlighted on Twitter 5 points that were generated by his defense yesterday. He had a
right,
massive
like
impact
completely
in the game.
Agreed.
One game, he was a plus 28. Guess what? He did a lot of things that impacted winning yesterday. I'm not saying that's how he is overall. He might have had just one good game, and that's why I'd never look at a plus minus for one game and say, oh, he's great or he's terrible. Of course not. Nobody's arguing
no,
that.
No, two games.
But you're saying...
You tweeted two about games. Two games.
I'm not saying
one
two
of them
games.
That we were up by 50 in.
I
and it
highlighted...
Because of
no,
Zach
no,
Collins.
No. I highlighted how crappy the Bulls have been with Vucevic on the floor in the entire month of February. And there's reasons for that. Because he sucked all month. Specifically on the defensive end. It's a layup
yeah, sure.
line.
Vooch sucks.
Every time
we agree,
he's out
Vooch
there.
Sucks.
And when he's
we
not
agree,
on
Vooch
the court,
sucks,
the
Zach
Bulls playing
better.
Better. All right, let's get off this topic. Because we're not going to agree on it. You think there's no value in the stat. I think there is.
Because there's not. Because there's scientifically not.
Okay.
Like factually, there's not. Like, the actual evidence is there's not.
Okay. The actual evidence, so they're just going to throw a stat out that has zero value. None whatsoever.
Yeah. Every time you post plus minus, I'm just going to blow up our podcast
go
and know you for 30
ahead.
Minutes, whether you
go
like
ahead.
Me or not.
I want to say one thing, though, to all the modest, as an aside, let's just table this. We're going to agree to disagree on this one. I do want to bring up all the modest people because there's a huge group of people out there, and I like modest. I think you like modest too. You probably have I think he's got a higher ceiling than me. If you had a bet right now, is modest ever going to make an All-Star team? If you had a bet
no,
right now,
no, I don't
now,
think so.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, then
I've never thought so.
You're probably lower on it than me. I think he's got the ability to make an All-Star team.
Well, that's a totally different sentence than what you said the first time. You said, "Do I think he will make an All-Star team?" And then you said, "Well, I think he has the ability to make an All-Star team." Like, those are like the first one is like he will do a thing. The second thing is like he might do a thing. Like, I think he might make an All-Star team, but I think if I had to guess and you said yes or no and you're putting me in a binary, I would guess no.
Okay. That's a fair.
Like, I don't think
the
odds
are
zero, is I guess what I'm saying.
Kirk Heinrich, the great Kirk Heinrich, never made an All-Star team. There's a lot of good players. Ben Gordon never made an All-Star team. There's a lot of good players that never made an All-Star team. Maybe that's not the best way of putting it. Do you think he'll be a starter on a good team? Do you think that's likely?
I mean, when you then say on a good team, I feel like that's meaningless. Because, like, if you think of, like, say, like the championship Lakers, like Derek Fisher was like a starter. Like, I don't know. I'd say like Derek Fisher is like a starter on a good team necessarily. Like, it depends. Like, could he be the fifth starter on a good team? For sure. Could he be the fourth starter on a good team? You know, maybe, probably. Like, do I think he could be a top three starter on a good team? Maybe the third one. That's like a maybe. If there's huge development, maybe he could get to the number two. I don't think he could ever be the best player on a good team. But it's kind of like there's a range of possibilities is what I would say. And I'd say like the likelihood is that he's going to be a fourth to eighth guy in a rotation, which is what I would say about Kobe White or Patrick Williams or Ayo Dosunmu. Like that's the same range of upside those guys have. Now, Patrick Williams doesn't look too hopeful at the moment. And so maybe he's not even going to be that good. But like, I think he's in that range of like, yeah, he's a contributor. He's a positive player. He could be in the rotation of a good team. He could be a starter in that rotation as long as he's not one of the stars. That's probably where he ends up to me.
Would you agree that your assessment's probably far lower than the vast majority of Bulls fans today?
I don't know if people are honest, if they would assess him a whole lot higher than that. Oh, like people always have hope for more, but like I think if they're like really honest themselves and had to bet the house on it, they'd be like, yeah, no.
I see a lot of similarities between the modest fans and their anger towards Billy Donovan as I did when I coached, you know, AAU with the last couple of years before I got more involved at the high school level. And a good analogy is everybody who listens to this show that, you know, I coach or knows, I know there's several parents. Everybody's going to, when I talk about this, is going to know who exactly I'm talking about. Let's just call this kid's name was Chuck. So I'll give you an example, what happened with the travel team. And this is an analogy to Modest Mouzelis. We competed in this highly competitive league called the DBBL. It's like in the Western suburbs. We had a roster of 8th graders. We had one 7th grader, exceptionally talented kid. I'm just going to say his name's Chuck. That's not his real name, but that's his name for this purpose of this pod. Immensely skilled offensive player. He could shoot, handle the ball, had all the makings like of being a really good basketball player. Like he was good. Naturally, his parents and even some other fans, our parents thought he should be playing more because he didn't play a lot. And the reason why was his defense was an abomination. So while the parents would watch the ball, like, you know, an opponent shoot a shot, the coaches, like we look at the film, and time again, Chuck failed to box out his man. And countless offensive rebounds were allowed by Chuck. He wasn't physical. He never provided help defense. Overall, his off-ball defense was non-existent. It wasn't his fault. He was young, great kid. We did our best to coach him up. But as a seventh grader, he didn't grasp anywhere near the importance of defense, and he wasn't good. So to these casual fans and parents, he looked great. He'd come in, hit a three-pointer, showcase some ball handling, you know, grab attention. But the reality is he never set screens, never grabbed offensive rebounds, never passed, only excelled in isolation scoring. That's what Modest is. These little things that coaches like, and I know Billy likes, boxing out, physicality, hustle plays, what truly impact winning, he's just not doing that now. So do you fight for your position? Do you keep your man off the boards? He's been terrible at it as a starter. And hold on to your seat. That's reflected in his negative plus minus in all these games. That said, what say you about Modest so far? Do you agree with my general take on this? Or do you feel that...
I love the way you said you want to table the plus minus, but then you needle it back in there. You're like, oh yeah, we're not going to talk about this again. But here I am. Here I am talking about it again. I'm going to let it go this time because I feel a little bad for going so hard on you already. Even though like I sort of agree with the point you're trying to make. I just so hate the proliferation of this stat because people use it in so many ways that are so bad.
All right, so ignore that. I didn't say that. But do you agree? Like, you sense there's a lot of anger towards Billy Donovan, right? Like,
there's definitely a lot of anger towards Donovan. People always hate the coach, and they always hate the general manager, like if the team's not good. Like this, and I think they especially always hate the coach unfairly. The general manager, I think, depending, it's a little more dicey. Like, people always hated Garpax, right? And I think they were okay. I don't think they were great, but they're okay. Like, not really worthy of hatred. Donovan, I think, is the same way. He's like the Garpax equivalent of coaches. Like, I think he's pretty good, but he's not great, maybe. And, you know, like, we're not a great coach away from everything. It's like people hate on Donovan on the one hand for, like, not playing rookies. On the other hand, for losing. On the other hand, like there's all these things, like, mixed up in it. So I think Donovan gets a little bit too much unfair press. With Modest, I think like I would play him and I just live with those things. I agree. Those are things he's got to learn in. He's got to get stronger, right? Like he's just physically not strong enough. yet for the position he's playing. But, you know, he also does other good things at times. Like, he shows really good defensive instincts at times. So I'm okay with, like, this is a learning process. But, yeah, I agree. Like, I've already started seeing a lot of these tweets like, oh, we're just sticking Mattis in the corner and we're not giving him enough, like, reps as the primary ball handler. I'm like, Mattis is not a primary ball handler. What are we talking about here? Like, he gets the ball plenty. He's getting up a good amount of shots. Like, it's, you know, unlike Pat, he gets aggressive when he gets the ball. So, yeah, I don't think you're wrong in the fact that, like, Mattis still has a long way to go to get better. I don't mind that he plays through all those mistakes, though. Certainly, when we were playing Pat Williams, like, all those minutes, it's not like Pat Williams was playing any better. So, you know, like, it's kind of like at this point, like, if I'm going to watch a guy make mistakes, I'll let the rookie do it instead of the guy who's in his fifth year and doesn't know what he's doing still. So, you know, part of it is also just as a comparison. Like, if you're going to, like, who else would you play at power forward right now? Like, if you just wanted to win, I mean, I guess you just play small ball, play Lonzo there. Like, I don't, you know, we don't have any good forwards on the roster, really. So it's like, I don't know. Like, what's the competition now? Pat Williams, if he's healthy, Julian Phillips, Mattis, and, you know, I'm trying to think if there's another power forward-ish guy in the roster.
I guess when Vooch comes back, you could probably get away with playing Zach Collins a little bit at the four. I think that's going to be a fascinating thing. What's going to happen when Vooch comes back? Because I think Collins has deserved to play. And if you're talking about winning, I think you can make the argument he's so much better defensively, and he's not even great, but I just think the Bulls have looked a lot better with him. You know, obviously it's not a big sample size, right? But
yeah, no, I mean, but we both think Vooch sucks. Like, I've been saying this forever. He just sucks. Like, that's the end of it, right?
I think he played really stinks. Well, for the first couple months of this year.
He didn't even play really well. He shot really well. Like, okay. I think we could even be clear about that. Like, it wasn't like he was doing all this other stuff, right? He was just shooting well. And when he was shooting well enough, it masked some of these other problems. And, you know, but, like, he's just not good. He's one of the worst defenders in the league. And the thing I've said for a long time is, like, we spend so much time trying to get him going. Like, you spend so much time trying to get him the ball in the post. You waste so much time on a possession. And then when it doesn't work, you only have a few seconds left to do anything else. Or you just end up with these, like, one point per shot type of numbers where, yeah, I took 21 shots. I got 21 points. And, like, that doesn't do anything for your team winning anymore in the NBA. Like, that's just not good enough. And, yeah, he kills you on the other end. And Zach Collins, like, the fact that he is just more mobile and he goes out there and he tries, and we don't waste, you know, so much time trying to get him involved and trying to force the offense through him, like, that makes the team a lot better. Like, because then it's just the guards, who are the strength of our team, are doing a lot more, and we're not trying to, like, force all of this stuff into what feels like a strength, like, theoretically, quote unquote, but is actually a weakness.
And actually, that's why his plus minus has been so high.
Dude, I can't take the bait anymore. I'm just gonna laugh with it. I'm gonna roll with it. Yeah, you won't get me going again. I already feel bad. I'm done.
I agree with you though. You're right, because I noticed this about watching Collins in the last couple of games. Like, he doesn't need the ball. He doesn't demand the ball. All he's trying to do is set picks for his guards and let them do their thing. And he's just playing a role. You know what I mean? He's totally fine in that role. And, you know, whereas Vooch is more, I want the ball, I want touches, I want to get the ball through me, I need to get my shots up. I thought Vooch played well the first couple months of the season. I think he's falling off a cliff, and I just can't stand watching him play basketball. I don't think I can't stand the plotting centers that don't play D. And, you know, Josh Giddey, this kind of leads a good segue into the next conversation. Josh Giddey's going to be here. Like, they're going to re-sign him. There's no doubt about that now. I have zero For sure. doubts about that. They're not going to let him walk. And maybe rightly so. He's played really well lately. But if Josh Giddey's going to be on your team, you can't have Vucevic be in your line of defense.
Agreed. That's a terrible, terrible setup. And like, Vooch is not a guy who's benefiting a lot from Giddey either.
Yes, agreed.
Hey, while we're on Giddey, and I think this is, we should probably even just cut this whole, like, plus minus thing out of this conversation. That was probably worth it.
I enjoyed it.
Trim that down a little bit. See if we can just have, like, 2 minutes of it somehow. But speaking of Josh Giddey, I think what is interesting is if I had told you at the start of the season, Josh Giddey will shoot 38% from three on 3.9 attempts per game, what would you think about that?
I think we already talked about it. I remember having a podcast where I discussed that saying it wasn't going to happen. You know, I remember you saying, if you can just get to 35, would you be happy? And the weird thing is, though, Doug, he hasn't been good all year from three. It's just this insane percentage in the last couple weeks. It's an insane percentage that has brought it up from like 33 to 38 almost overnight. You know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's six games. Like the last six games he's shot like 75% or something over the last like six games.
That's incredible. But you would admit, though, like obviously I think we had a different history in Josh Giddey. I was not happy with that trade. I stand by that. I think it was ridiculous that we didn't get a draft asset in addition to Josh Giddey or just go after the draft assets. That said, you were much higher on it. And then as the season went on, I became more open to re-signing him because I thought he improved. I thought there's some good stuff he does. You seem to be like, I want him off the team. We switched places there. But I think now we're probably coming together to say, like, I don't know. I don't want to just see him walk. I think he's absolutely shown enough improvement and promise to say, I want him on the team. It's the question is, what's the dollar amount?
Yeah, I mean, that's always true of any player that you think is an above vet min player. And I think the implicit thing here is I feel like we're going to pay way too much for him. Like, I also would like Josh Giddey on the team at the right dollar amount. And probably even at the beginning of the year when you didn't like Josh Giddey, if you knew we were going to re-sign him for like $8 million a year, even before this year started, you would have probably said like, yeah, okay, he's got some real flaws, but at $8 million, he's a backup point guard.
Of course.
You know, I'd be fine. You know,
more than that.
You know? So like but what I mean, like even at your most hatred of Josh, you'd have still taken him at the right price.
I would have taken him at Kobe White's contract. Absolutely.
So what we say is, like, it's always the price. And so our feeling is that Josh was going to get like $25 million plus a year. And I still think that's true. And I still think that's too much. And part of it then is like, what is your holistic strategy? And I think your holistic strategy going into this year, and I would have agreed with this strategy, by the way, I'm not against it, is like, I would prefer that we trade our talented guys, we get a draft pick for Caruso instead of Josh Giddey, we be bad for a couple of years in these amazing drafts coming up, and then we rebuild around the talent we get in these next two drafts. And my strategy in the offseason was pretty similar to that. I suggested to trade Kobe White and Io in the offseason. I don't think you are with me on that in the offseason, but I think you kind of changed your tune by the deadline to be like, you know, probably at least makes sense to trade Kobe. I know, you know, maybe you want to keep Io, but like, you know, trade one of these guys. Like, it's the contract situation of like, if you're going to be bad for 2 years anyway, then they're going to be unrestricted free agents. They're going to stop you from being too bad, and then you're going to have to pay them like $30 million, or they're going to walk, or they're just not going to be any good anymore. You don't want them anyway. Like, there's not a scenario where they are value contracts on their next deal after you're bad for 2 years. So now the situation this offseason with Giddey is kind of like, well, what do you do? You know, like you're not going to get anything for him in a sign and trade, most likely. And you've already hosed up being really bad in this draft. And so you've already kept going on this, like, I don't really want to be bad area. And, you know, so it's kind of like hard to figure out what you do with this team. Like I don't know how to make this team better when they refuse to try to get any draft assets or maximize the draft assets they have. And they just want to get better by adding average players to the team on expensive contracts. But that seems to be the path we're going to try to take to dig our way out of this.
So I, on Twitter, I don't know if you saw this poll, but I stated on Twitter, Josh Giddey's exceptional recent play has made his extension with the Bulls inevitable. I think we both believe that. He's going to be re-signed. What is the most that you would find acceptable in terms of average per year when the announcement is made? So I had four bands, 12 to 18 million, 19 million to 21, 22 to 25, and 26 or more. What percentage of the fan base, so keep in mind, most What would you find acceptable if he signed? So 31% said between 12 and 18. I kind of disagree with that. Like, I think he's played up to at least 19 to 21, which is 37%, which was actually the highest. Where would you go? Like, what band would you think is fair for Josh Giddey?
It's maybe two different questions of, like, what is fair for Josh Giddey and where I would go.
Okay.
Like, I probably would be in that second band too, like whatever you said, like 19 to 21 million. But I might just be in the first band as far as where I'd go. Cause like, again, like I just don't want to keep trying to add players that are going to stop you from being really bad and never add good draft picks and then pay those guys like a ton of money and then like wonder why you can't put together a good team. And it feels like Josh Giddey to me is still one of these guys where like, if you're a really good team, what is Josh Giddey doing for you? And I just don't know the answer to that yet. Like, I agree he's playing a lot better and we're not winning though. Like, so where does Josh Giddey fit on a really good team? Because if on a really good team, I don't think he is the primary ball handler. And if he's not, then is he still valuable? And if the answer is no, and he has to be a bench player, then he has to be in this 12 to 18 million or less range. So, you know, like part of that is like, if you want an average team, then maybe Josh can fit in as a $25 to $30 million player on that team. You know, but that's really kind of where we're at. And I think we're trying to build like the average team, like at best, like I think we're excited just to make the play-in. So, you know, with that, we'll pay him a lot of money, but I don't think if we had a championship caliber team, Josh Giddey fits on it unless he's like at 18 million or less.
What would you bet if you had to put money on it right now that he would be signed for this offseason?
I bet 28 million.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was going to say 25. 28, I think, would really disappoint the vast majority of Bulls fans. I mean, like 26 million or more, 8.4% said yes. I mean, there will be people who will say, well, that's what he should get. Look at Emmanuel Quickley. Look what, you know, Suggs got with Orlando and 30 million. You know, again, my counter is Quickley was a joke contract and it was a mistake. And that's part of the reason why the Raptors suck. Suggs is an incredible defensive player. I think he impacts winning more. It probably is justified for him to get 25 million. I just don't know if it's in the long run going to be conducive to us getting into the playoffs and making a deep run. I just don't know if he is.
Again, play hardball. Like, just play hardball. Like, here's our offer. Here's our offer of 17 million a year for 3 years or 5 years. You know, maybe like offer him effectively Pat Williams contract and then just say like, look, here's our offer. If you go think you it. Can find better, go do it.
Yeah.
No, we won't sign and trade you. Go find another offer.
The last time I looked, this might have been before the trade deadline, so this might have changed. I think there were like six teams I saw that could potentially sign him, you know, for enough to make us sweat. The Nets were the big one. They had a ton of cap space. I don't know if they still have that cap space, but they did. I think they had like over 70 million. I don't know what their interest in Josh Giddey would be, but it's possible. The Rockets were another team. The Wizards, the Spurs had, I think, something over 20 million, and Detroit Pistons. I don't know how realistic I don't think the Pistons would ever think of bringing him in, but, you know, maybe the Nets would. Maybe the Spurs would. Who knows? Not even the Spurs. They already got their answer to their point guard now, so I guess the Wizards.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, and it came down to, like, from a practical standpoint, it was going to be, I think, maybe just Detroit and Washington. The Nets that were going to have cap space or something. I'm going to try and look it up for you real quick while we're on the show. Dunkdown, who I talk about a lot, they do a podcast on their site. They have like a cap setup where you can see all of the expected cap range, like after all the cap holds and people they think the team will keep and like all this other stuff. So I'll see if I can sneak in there and find it. Like,
it's kind of a fascinating discussion though. I do feel like, I mean, this is again, part of the move of bringing in Giddey, which I wasn't excited about, is you got to make this difficult decision right away when you should be tanking. I mean, that said, I think it is good, though. He's playing well. He is playing well. There's no doubt about that. The last five games, he's been great on the offensive end. He's even playing better on defensively. Teams still hunt him out in pick and roll. I saw it last night against Toronto. First six possessions, looking for him to do pick and roll.
Yeah, so looking at what, this is from Dunked On on February 4th, which I think is still before the trade deadline. I'm not sure. But they've got Brooklyn at like $67 million likely cap room. Detroit at $20 million likely cap room. And no one else over the mid-level exception. So there's not going to be a lot of options out there. Now, the one thing, Giddey's qualifying offer is like $11 million, $12 million a year. I don't have it in front of me. But I think that is the real risk is if you offer him, say, 18, and he's like, yeah, you know what? I'll just play on the qualifying offer. I'll lose, you know, $7 million this year, and then I'll hit next year. There's expected to be a ton of money the year after that. So, you know, that would be the flip side of what Giddey's leverage is going to be. And then you have to decide, like, are you okay with that? Because if he takes a qualifying offer, he's probably going to walk. So that's Giddey's leverage. He's just like, yeah, whatever, I'll take the qualifying offer. So you got to get close enough to the ballpark that he's not going to do that. And so maybe that takes you to like $20 million a year. But I think you get to like $20 million a year and you throw like, you say you do 3 years in a player option or 4 years in a player option, whatever he wants. Like, I feel like then is like risk reward. You know, it's like, all right, I'm going to lose, you know, $8 million up front. And then I got to hope I get, you know, like don't get hurt and don't get like all this other stuff goes wrong for me. And then like, you know, like my upside is, I don't know, like maybe I can get $25 million a year for 4 years. So, you know, you're going to offer me 100 over five and I could get 100 over four instead, plus the 11 million. Like, yeah, maybe my max upside is like 30 million, but like my downside is I tear an ACL and I lose 100 million. Like, you know, might be at, there's some point in there where I think you can squeeze them a little bit and still give them something reasonably fair.
Doug, today, let's bring in the bus here because we're already over 44 minutes. I feel like I've been in a heavyweight fight here. But let's, last question before we go in. The Bulls currently are the 10th seed. They're 2.5 games now ahead of the Nets and the Sixers. They're actually 3 games on the Sixers. I mean, they pretty much, I think they're going to be the 10th seed. I don't know if you feel the same way. But that said, they play the Hawks in the play-in then. And then they played a winner of the Heat Magic game. Do you think it's possible the Bulls could actually get into the playoffs?
I don't think they will beat. Yeah, no. I mean, it's, I guess anything is possible, right? It's like, it's 2 games. You know, like you can get lucky and win 2 games, right? No matter how good the other teams are. You know, I feel like the Magic, I've not followed them closely recently. And I know Paolo and Franz were both out, and Suggs is now out. So I don't know what that looks like for them, like from a practical perspective, with the timelines on all those guys coming back, or even if, you know, potentially possibly a couple of them came back recently. I just looked up their most recent game. It looks like Paolo and Franz are both back. So, you know, like I think they could be, yeah, they're not going to beat Orlando if those guys are back, is my guess. Or they certainly wouldn't be favored. But again, it's like you can beat anyone in a single game, right?
Yeah, I think they could beat the Heat. I think they could. I could actually see it happening where they beat the Hawks and they beat the Heat, and then they're the 8th seed. At that point, what's the best they can draft? Is
14th for the 8th seed. Or sorry, 15th.
Holy cow. I think that's the worst case scenario, DT. I don't want that to happen. But, you know, because even if they get in against the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're going to get waxed in, you know, probably 4 games. So, you know, what good is that? What are you going to do? I guess you can argue it's good for Modest, good for Giddey to get the fire of the playoffs. But, geez, man, that would be something to actually fall all the way back to 15.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know if I care all that much if the other scenario is we draft like 10th.
Yeah.
Like falling from 10th to 15th, yeah, that does kind of blow. But you know, we're going to get passed by San Antonio. Like they're going to, with Wemby out the rest of the year, San Antonio is going to be worse for us. We're going to be seeded ninth, like at the end of the year. And yeah, you know, then I guess it's like our most likely scenario at nine is we're going to pick either ninth or 10th. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
You still got a shot to get Cooper Flagg in that scenario. You don't even have a shot to get him if you end up winning.
Yeah, your both that's fine. Games. Like, yeah, I mean, like, I'd rather be ninth than pick 15. Like, I'm not rooting for us to win out in the play-in and make it to the playoffs. I'm just saying, like, so say the lottery actually happens, though, right? And you were ninth. If you had finished ninth and stayed there rather than winning out, that you would have picked, you'd have a 50.7% chance of picking at nine, a 25.9% chance at picking at 10. Like if you ended up at nine and you stayed at nine, which is about half the odds, like I don't know that I would care all that much dropping from 9 to 15. Not ideal. You know, the problem is if the ninth team moves up and now you're in the play-in, you made the playoffs and your seed moved up, then you'd feel really terrible about it, right? But if you didn't move up and you moved back, it's like, well, yeah, this kind of blows. We'd rather be at nine than 15, but it wouldn't be the end of the world. You know, if you gave up number one to make this playoffs, you really would kind of feel like this is the end of the world.
On that note, DT, let's bring it in. I can't thank you enough for your time. This was awesome. Always good to chat with you, especially around arguing on stats. It's always a lot of fun. Big picture, I hope the Bulls continue to show improvement but lose. I think that's the best way.
My blood pressure is up, Fred. It's not calmed down from this discussion.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
I gotta go upstairs and like just take some Valium or something. I don't actually have Valium.
It's good to have some fire on this show. It's good. I think the people enjoy it.
We can't get fired up about the team. We can only get fired up about random ways of which way is more accurate to say this team is struggling. That's where the fire is at.
I think, you know, I might take it personally. I think the plus minus stat did come out of the University of Northeast Idaho, which explains why I'm so, you know, defensive of it. So maybe that's why.
It is an interesting element to add to the game. I just like the better versions of it a lot more. I still think then it's like, I hate it when people quote it in like these really short, just single game things like you like to do.
Well, right? I know you hate it.
And then say, well, it doesn't explains, really mean this.
Which explains why I'm going to quote it as much as possible and CC you on it.
Well, I'm just going to get you reply angrily to all of your tweets.
All right, DT. Let's bring it in, my friend. It's always good to talk to you. Until next time, let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls.